basketball great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has written a book about basketball and the Harlem Renaissance. That phrase describes the gathering of black writers in the 20s and 30s, Langston Hughes, County Cullen, Zora Neale Hurston. It also describes the Harlem Renaissance Casino and Ballroom, which played host to great jazz bands and a great all-black basketball team, the New York Wrens for Renaissance. As Kareem Abdul-Jabbar recounts, the Renaissance Ballroom was a place where African Americans didn't just entertain whites, as they did at other famous Harlem clubs. At the Renaissance, they were the audience, and they were the show, and quite a show it was.
Basketball and music on the same card. They'd play the first half of the basketball game. Then at halftime, they'd have an exhibition, let's say, of Lindy Hoppers or a warm-up band. Then they'd play the second half of the game. And then after the game was over, you'd have Cab Calloway till 3 a.m. That was, I think, a special aspect of what the Renaissance Casino and Ballroom was all about. They had basketball, sports, and music at the same time.
The Wrens did get to play against white teams after a time, yes?
The Wrens played against white teams when they were barnstorming, but these games were not considered official games. And the Wrens, by and large, won most of these games, but they still were not considered to be fit to compete against the other teams because they were an all-black team.
There's a photograph that you include in your book, which shows the Wrens versus the original Celtics, and the Wrens center Tarzan Cooper about to jump against the Celtics center Joe Lapchick. And that, you say, maybe the first jump ball between a white man and a black man in professional basketball.
Quite probably so. The Wrens and Celtics started playing against each other very early on in the 20s. And early on, the Celtics were the better team. They beat the Wrens pretty regularly. The Wrens would manage a win, let's say, every four or five games. The Wrens might win a game. But the Celtics were too tough for them initially. And as time passed on, the Wrens became the dominant team.
How did people react to an all-white team playing an all-black team?
Well, ethnic rivalry was something that was used in all sports at that time, especially boxing. I think the reason that the Wrens finally got a chance to compete for the professional championship in 1939 was the fact that in the year prior to that, Joe Louis had beat Max Schmeling. And the newspaper in Chicago decided to have a championship that would feature all of the best professional teams. And the Wrens and the Globetrotters were invited to compete.
Yes, you should explain that the Harlem Globetrotters, talk about misnomers, the Harlem Globetrotters were not from Harlem.
The Harlem Globetrotters were from Chicago. And Abe Saperstein named them Harlem Globetrotters so that people would know that they were a black team. But it really was confusing. I remember I grew up thinking that the Harlem Globetrotters were from Harlem.
There's an obvious reason for being confused,
yes.
Being called the Harlem Globetrotters. Yes.
They're called the Harlem Globetrotters. Prior to that, they played at the Chicago Savoy, and I think they were the Savoy Big Five.
So the Globetrotters, when they played in that tournament in 1939, were they clowning around already at that point, or no?
The Globetrotters always clowned around. That was their, more or less, their trademark. They wanted to do entertainment.
Harlem Wrens, a very different story.
Very much a different story. Their approach to the game was all business. They wanted to make everybody respect them as sportsmen. Abe Saperstein, I think, felt that white Americans would be more comfortable seeing his team clown around and conform to a lot of the negative racial stereotypes that many whites had with regard to blacks, because he did not want to go head-to-head against racial attitudes in this country.
So for you, the all-business New York Wrens were of a piece with the County Cullen and Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston, the intellectuals who form the core of what we think of as the Harlem Renaissance.
Oh, certainly. I think the Wrens belonged in the Renaissance Casino or at the Savoy, and the Globetrotters conformed with the more stereotypical image of blacks that whites had, that the Cotton Club and the other segregated clubs promoted.
There's a little slice of Harlem sociology that turns up in your writing about Bob Douglas, who created and ran the team, and that is that he was born in the islands. He came up from the West Indies. And in New York, there's always been a little, or maybe not sometimes not so little, a tension between I don't even know if we use African-Americans equally, but African-Americans and West Indians, let's say.
Oh, certainly. And people from the West Indies, when they got to New York, they wanted to take advantage of the fact that they could own businesses and also be property owners. And American-born blacks resented that in a lot of instances because they didn't like seeing black people doing that for some reason. I don't get it. To this day, I don't get it, but that's a fact. I know when I was a kid, when I'd go visit my grandmother in Brooklyn, black kids would call the kids from the Caribbean monkey chasers and other negative terms because possibly the people from the Caribbean had the benefit of a good education and had aspirations that a lot of American blacks did not entertain. And it was very difficult to overcome the resentment between the two groups.
Your family came up from was it from Trinidad?
Trinidad. My grandmother and grandfather left Trinidad in 1917 and settled in Brooklyn.
When you were young and when you were coming out of UCLA and the best basketball player in the country, there was so much odder sensitivity about race, about your embracing Islam, for example, and changing your name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Going back to read about some of those things, as I was preparing to talk with you, it does feel as if some of the things that you were saying and doing as a very young man would almost pass completely unnoticed today, and yet were the source of tremendous comment and discussion in the days of, well, perhaps because it was the days of Muhammad Ali. Do you get the sense that life has changed a great deal in those ways since the 1960s, or do things feel more static to you?
I think life has changed tremendously since the 1960s. You mentioned Muhammad Ali. I was very fortunate just to come immediately behind him because I was not trying to make a political statement about changing my name and becoming Muslim. For me, it was a question of faith only. And Muhammad Ali had a lot of political considerations that went into his conversion. So for me, it was a lot easier just because I came behind him. And I think those of us who had to deal with different controversial issues in the 60s and 70s made it a lot easier for things to be different now.
Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, thank you very much for coming in to talk with us about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
His book is called On the Shoulders of Giants, My Journey Through the Harlem Renaissance. You can read an excerpt at npr.org, where you can also see the photo of the jump ball that we heard about.